This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on our Facebook page as well. You can find that on Facebook and, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, something like that, right, Dave Manuk?
Correct.
There you go. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program former NHL player, former member of the Canadian national team, Claude Vilgrain is our guest on the line. Claude, Mr. Vilgrain, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning and thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Thank you for giving us your time to talk about the issues, the racial issues, the social justice issues that we have seen in professional sports and in the NHL for the last 48 hours or so. And we appreciate you coming on with us. You know, can you sort of walk us through your thought process? What was happening in the world maybe on Wednesday where you see the NBA players go on strike and refuse to play the games that they were scheduled, the playoff games that they were scheduled. Meanwhile, the NHL went forward with their games on Wednesday before, you know, postponing the games on Thursday and Friday. Can you maybe walk our audience through what was going through your mind, your thought process in that time?
Well, I wasn't watching the basketball at the time, and I just heard about the game being canceled, which I'm not surprised with what's happening right now and how strongly the basketball players feel about it. I know that people think the NHL didn't react quick enough, but, you know, they're in a tough situation as well. And then the fact that they came back and some of the players stood together and then made a statement. I'm pretty proud of them. So it's a tough situation. You know, hockey is different than the basketball and the baseball and the football. You know, it's more a wide sport, and a lot of the guys are they're for some of them. I'm sure it's new because I know I played. You know, I was always the only black guy everywhere I played. I had to explain a lot of stuff throughout my career, and then. But the fact they stood together, I was proud of the players, and so that was my thought process at the time.
Well, Claude, you mentioned that a lot of the time you're the only black player, and you know, you had a storied NHL career. You know, Drew mentioned that you know you're drafted by the Red Wings, you played for the national team, you know, represented Canada in the '88 Olympics, which were of course in Calgary. You know, went on to play 89 games for the New Jersey Devils and the Vancouver Canucks, and. You know, just going back to, you know, your time in the NHL in the late 80s and early 90s, and as you mentioned, you know, not having very many black players. I remember, you know, Tony McKegnie, of course, Grant Fuhr, but when you look at what's going on in the NHL and there are more black players now, but specifically, you know, with Evander Kane and Matt Dumba, Nazem Kadri, the Hockey Diversity Alliance, does that just fill you with pride in terms of, you know, what these players are doing, using their platforms to, you know, bring awareness and hopefully bring action, you know, to what's been going on in the U.S.?
Yeah, I'm very proud of players, you know, speaking up and using their voice and platform like that. I'm part of a time, like, from I would say, Willie Ory to the Piki Subban that, the guys like me, Grant Townsend, Ray Neufeld, it's a time that nobody really know about because we were just playing and our dreams was to make it to the NHL and we would just look the other way when stuff was done to us. You just mentioned some of my stats or places I played. If you look at my hockey DB, a lot of players would give their right arm to do half of what I did. And my dad always told me after I retired, I should be proud. But there was always something was missing. Obviously, I wanted to play 1,000 games in the NHL. But like any other kid that growing up in Canada or Quebec City, like I was, I wanted one day I wanted to be a Guy Lafleur. I wanted to play in the NHL. And although it seems like I had a great career, which I did, but it was hard. It was hard from the moment I was playing peewee, go to tournaments and kids not shaking my hands, I never had so many bananas thrown at me when I played in Europe, and it wasn't that easy. But my dream was to play in the NHL and play professional hockey, and I enjoyed it. I made some good friends. I had some bad situation, but I brushed it off. But one of the things, well, we're talking about what the NHL should do, and my focus since retiring has been on the youth development. You know, seeing more diversity is great, but still get countless calls from parents about comments and slurs they're shivering get. It's heartbreaking. So as I played, I don't want the kids to go through what I went through. When a black kid goes at the rink and he just want to be one of the other guys, play hockey, same dream, same thing, and he doesn't look at his color or ethnic background. He just want to be a hockey player. So that's my take on that.
Claude Vilgrain is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Claude played in the NHL for the New Jersey Devils, the Philadelphia Flyers, and, of course, the Vancouver Canucks after being drafted by the Detroit Red Wings. Was a member of the Canadian Olympic team in 1988 and played two full seasons, of course, with Canada's national team.
You know, Claude, that's just one thing I think people maybe don't understand is just how frequently these types of events, like I couldn't even imagine having a banana thrown at me, and you obviously experienced that not once, but numerous times. So how frequently did these types of racist acts occur throughout your playing career? And what was the reaction of your teammates? Because I would imagine that what they were thinking as you were being subjected to these types of attacks.
Oh, all kind of things happened to me. Like if you had like 5 hours, I could tell you tons of stories.
Yeah.
Often, you know, like when a coach is mad at you, goes down on you, and in front of your teammate, he might say you're lazy, you're not playing the system, wake up. But me, it was always another level. And some of my teammates, nobody really stood for me. They just told me, okay, Claude, brush it off. It's nothing. You know, don't listen to him. That's basically what I had. And throughout my career, I just brush it up and then go back on the ice, work harder. One of the things I always said that it's ignorance made people racist or have different views. One of the things on almost every team I've played on, think about it. I'm a French guy coming from the Quebec League, and I'm black, so I had a bunch of white men against me back in those days. And guys would say something about the French guys or about another black guy, the N-word and the frog or whatever, and I would say, hey, I'm standing beside you. I'm your teammate. You know, at least respect me. And the comment I would get all the time, oh, you don't act like them, Claude. You act like us, and you know it's not the same. This guy is one of these. This guy is the end guy. You don't act like them. And then, what am I going to do? You know, had conversations, but I was in a situation back in those days. My margin of error was almost zero. You know, if I put my foot down or say something, defend myself, I would get comments like, oh, "What's wrong with you?" And then. And that would be discarded pretty quick. So that's just a part of it. But there's so many other things that happened to me. We can't get into that anyway. So
Claude Vilgrain is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's discussing his experiences in the NHL and in professional hockey as a person of color. Claude, you know, do you feel as though you weren't given the same opportunities as some of your Caucasian teammates, that a Caucasian teammate may have been given a second or a third chance to make a team, whereas you didn't get that same opportunity because you're black?
Well, I don't know. It's always a year later or a few months later. I hear a guy tells me, "Yeah, it's because of this, because of that." So, my dad always told me, "You never know who's going to make decision on you if he has problems with your race. And then you can never give him a chance to cut you or dismiss you. And every time I would get caught, I would blame myself. You know, I wasn't good enough, even if I thought I was good enough. But nobody ever, nobody ever took the time to work with me. Every time I made it, either playing the NHL, the Team Canada, the coaching staff took the time to get to know me. And that's the difference with other players. You know, my style was maybe a little different, but every time I got to a new dressing room, you could tell there was questions, they were wondering. And as a black person, always have to announce myself as a good person, a funny person, make jokes just to make people comfortable. And I was talking to my daughter about that. Now she got a scholarship in the States. She played pro in Sweden, and she felt the same way. She always had to make jokes, black jokes, just to make people comfortable, so they don't walk on eggshells. And that was basically my career. And I had a good career, but as I'm watching the NHL Classic, some of the games, and look at some of the coaches, and I go back to some of the coaches I had no chance with those guys. You know, GM signed me, but the coaches, they had no time, no desire to get to know me, and I just get dismissed like go to minors or play well in minors, but. I could tell there was no light at the end of the tunnel. But as I've said before, if you look at my hockey DB, I had a pretty good career.
You know, Claude, I wanted to ask you something in regards to what you just mentioned. About a year and a half ago, we had Paul Girard on the show, and he's from Winnipeg. And at the time when he was in the NHL, he was one of the only black coaches, if not the only black coach. And he now is a coach for the University of Nebraska, Omaha. How important, in your opinion, is it to have more black coaches, not just at the pro level, but at the minor level and at the grassroots level?
Yeah, you know, it goes by what I said earlier, coaching and playing, just open the doors, give opportunities to kids or guys like me. I coach in the AAA, and now, if you're good enough, you'll do a good job, but I think the problem is it depends. It comes from the top, and depends. Some of the people, they're not comfortable with these things. I'll give you an example. Lockout in 94, I decided I could get out of my contract with the Flyers, and I want to go to Europe. And lockout in 94, there's a lot of NHL guys who are going to Switzerland. So there was not that many jobs, and there's a job in Abili. And my agent was trying to get me in there, and the contract was enormous, but I was between me and the kids on the East Coast League, never played anywhere else in the East Coast League. And my agent was working hard to try to get me in there. And then I finally signed the contract. I ended up spending 3 years there, like barely nobody in town talked to me. And I found out from the GM at the end, who I became friends with, is the problem was we weren't sure if you were going to be accepted. So they had to survey the fans, survey the sponsors, survey the board, and they put a vote on, and they decided to give me a try. And that's how, basically, that's how I think a lot of things are viewed. Okay, are the kids going to accept a black coach? You know, what if he's not very good? How are we going to fire him or things like that? I'm sure that a lot of those things goes through their minds.
Last question for you, Claude. Claude Vilgrain is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You mentioned your daughter played hockey at a pretty high level, getting a scholarship to the University of New Hampshire. She played at the University of British Columbia. She played overseas in Sweden. Her name is Cassandra Vilgrain. Has her experience improved at all upon the experience that you had? You know, are things maybe getting better? Obviously not as good as they should be, but incrementally, are things getting better in the game of hockey, and your daughter maybe had a better experience or less overt racism than you experienced in your career?
Oh, definitely. It's much easier for the new generation, even though at times, you know, there's a lot of ignorance out there. She had a good time. She played well. She had to deal with other players from other teams, but compared to what I went through, she got it much better. And I was watching for that all the time. You know, you're very protective of your kids, and you know what's out there. And the new generation of kids, you know, they got it easier. And but still, you got to watch out. You know, you got Jerome Iginla that is going to the Hall of Fame. He's very well liked. Again, it's all about knowledge and get to know people and see who they really are. And then as for the NHL, they're in a tough situation, but I know for talking to the NHL diversity that they're trying hard to change the culture. And as I said before, I think for the NHL, working, changing the culture of grassroots hockey and create some youth development camps for the, you know, to be more inclusive, that would be a great start in the right direction.
Claude Vilgrain played in the NHL for the Canucks, the Devils, the Flyers. He played for the Canadian Olympic team at the 88 Olympics and spent a number of years playing overseas in both Germany and Switzerland. Claude, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate you speaking so honestly, so passionately, and so eloquently about your experience, and all the best to you and your family going forward.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and enjoy the show.
Thank you, Claude. All the best. Take care. When we come back, we'll have more on the topic of the day. We'll touch on the NHL playoffs. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Claude Vilgrain for joining us to talk about his experience as an African-Canadian hockey player, obviously from originally from Haiti, born in Haiti, played his junior career in the QMJ. AHL, in case you want to respond to that interview, by all means, we want to hear from you at Illegal Curve on Twitter. And that gives me an excellent segue to check out the Odd Shark inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddsshark.net. Earlier, we asked you our question of the day: what role do you see David Gustafson holding for the Winnipeg Jets next season? Andy on Twitter thinks that Gustafson is going to be the fourth line center. Clever comment from Scott, clever being a little bit in quotes there, says he's going to be the guy who opens the gate for players getting on and off the ice. Cleveland430 on Twitter, I've gotten the sense they would like to ease him into the NHL as a fourth line center and let him grow into an expanded role. Jets seem to be committed to Adam Lowry as the third line center, which would be even more effective if he had a big tough winger on his line, somebody like Wayne Simmonds or Patrick Maroon. That's coming from Cleveland, so a lot of comments coming in to the Odd Shark inbox. Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets, we find them in the Odd Shark inbox. Remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net.
What are the odds on this Lightning-Bruins game four here?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to look those up and check it out. That's going to get underway in a couple minutes. The Avs and the Stars, yep. That series, Dallas is up 2-1 after they won the
Who
first two
Dallas
games.
Dallas at the beginning of the season?
I don't know. Couldn't have been you, Dave, because why would you be talking about it otherwise?
Yeah, beginning of the season, a.k.a. 3 years ago.
It seems like it's been about 3 years ago. You're not wrong about that. Can the Avs overcome the injuries to Grubauer and Eric Johnson in this series, or is that going to be too much, and Dallas is going to be is going to take it as a result of those two key injuries to the Avs starting goaltender and then a member of their back end?
Don't forget good Brandon boy Matt Calvert.
Matt
either,
Calvert,
Drew.
Too.
Come on,
sure.
We've got to get him in. But, no, I mean, let's be honest. Pavel Francouz has not been good. He flat out has not been good. Anton Khudobin has badly outplayed him. Mm-hmm. And what's funny, guys, is if you remember going back to the round robin portion, Francouz shut out the Stars, right? So yeah. It's just funny, you know, how that works. And I heard Kevin Woodley on the afternoon ride yesterday. Woodley obviously is a guy that we've had on the show many times before, writes for NHL.com, In Goal Magazine. And he was saying that he was just flat out surprised at how much he has struggled here since coming in for Grubauer, right? And, you know, his save percentage has been very poor, under 900 save percentage in the three games versus the Stars, or more like, you know, two and a half games.
Yeah.
But the point is they need him to be better. But, you know, that was a big win for the Avalanche, because if you watch that game, I mean, they almost blew it at the end.
Well, they were up. They were up, what were they up, 3-0? And then the Stars scored four unanswered goals to take a 4-3 lead, and then Colorado came back to end up winning 6-4.
Well, it's actually, and, you know, I had to, you know, read this twice. The NHL put this out because, you know, I know you're on this list. The NHL Public Relations, they put out an email. It was actually the first time in NHL playoff history a team has given up a three-goal lead, gone down a goal in the third period, and then won a game by two goals. Because if you think about it, usually when you give up, you know, a three goal lead and go down by a goal, you lose the game, right?
Sure. So, especially in the third period.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, huge win for the Avalanche, and, you know, that was a series we were all really looking forward to. I know that Dave likes the Stars in that series, and I'll be shocked if this doesn't go to at least six games, guys, because, I mean, these are two evenly matched teams. I still think Colorado is more skilled, but Eric Johnson, I'll say this much, that's a big injury for them. Kevin Connaughton has come into the lineup, but Eric Johnson, you know, obviously, you know, he isn't as skilled as Cale Makar is, but, you know, he's a very important defenseman for them, so that's going to be something to watch going forward, because it doesn't look like he's coming back anytime soon.
No, out indefinitely, same with Philip Grubauer. It's going to be difficult. An uphill climb for the Avalanche. You get that? Yeah. A little bit of a pun there?
Former Jet Michael Hutchinson backing up Pavel Francouz.
Yeah, but I just made a good pun about avalanches and uphill climbs. Yeah. When we come back, Ryan Clark, he covers the Colorado Avalanche.
You can tell him
Athletic.
About the pun.
Yeah, I'll tell him
about
the pun.
He thinks about the pun.
Thank you. I think appreciate that. Ryan Clark joins us next to talk about more about that series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The man on my left is Ezra Ginsberg. The man on my right is Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you back to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, he covers the Colorado Avalanche. We're pleased to welcome to the program Ryan Clark. Ryan, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing fine and dandy, Ryan. Got the Lightning and the Bruins on the TV here. About to get underway after the two-day strike by the players in the NHL. Ryan, obviously we want to talk to you about the Avalanche and the Stars series, a series the Stars lead 2-1. But on Wednesday night, or after Wednesday night, when the games ended and the NHL was really the only professional sports league that played that night, with the other leagues going on strike, the players protesting against social injustice, protesting against police brutality, how much regret do you think the players had that participated in games on Wednesday night and maybe felt as though, in hindsight, they made a bad decision leading to the NHL strikes on Thursday and Friday?
It's hard to say and put a number on, but maybe the thing that kind of says it all is Ryan Reeves saying he went to bed wondering, did they do the right thing? And then him waking up, the text from Kevin Shattenkirk, and then, of course, the Vancouver Canucks get in touch with him. And it leads to this iconic moment Thursday, which it feels weird to call something iconic that was just 2 days ago, but hey, it's 2020 where nothing makes sense. And it's the sort of image that when you think about what Wednesday was like and what happened Thursday and then Friday, where you're having players and coaches answer these sort of questions that you've never heard them really answer in mass like this ever in this league. It shows that there was some thought that was put into it clearly. But as for where this thing goes going forward, that's really the big question left that a lot of people are asking at the moment.
Yeah, and Ryan, sticking with, you know, the players and all standing up united, I thought it was almost poetic that, you know, in the game for the Colorado Avalanche, the last two goals were scored by Nazem Kadri and Pierre-Edward Belmar. Obviously, Kadri getting the winning goal versus the Dallas Stars, but even though, you know, it's going to be tough to, you know, segue in back into hockey, considering what's going on, you know, down south and really everywhere. But for you, was that kind of the key for the Colorado Avalanche? Because obviously Nathan MacKinnon has been a one-man wrecking crew all playoffs with points in 11 straight games. But for you, was that something that you would point to and say that they need more of that, more scoring from the second line, the third line, the fourth line?
That and the defenseman, because you think about the goal Nikita Zadorov had, the goal Andrei Burakovsky scored, and the two goals you mentioned from Pierre-Edward Belmar and Nazem Kadri, and that was just the thing is a year ago this time, all the pieces were in place with what they did in free agency and trade for people to say, maybe this looks like a team that finally has supplementary scoring, but you just won't know until they hit the ice because at that point it's all hypotheticals. You saw it work throughout a regular season where they went through injuries. Then the round robin arrives and you see it there too. You see it throughout the Arizona Coyotes series, but yet to see it against the Dallas Stars, you could argue that's really been the biggest difference between those two teams through the first two games. Dallas had 6 of its 10 goals scored by players who weren't Jamie Benn, Alexander Radulov, and Tyler Seguin. Whereas if the Avalanche, until Game 3, all 5 of their goals had come from Gabriel Landeskog, Nathan MacKinnon, and Mikko Rantanen. So to get that secondary scoring, it is going to be immense. Because look, the thought with the Avalanche has been, this is a team that finally has 4 lines. You saw that in Game 3. What will that look like tomorrow? What will it look like Monday? Or what will it look like in retrospect if the Stars win this series?
Now, Ryan, is there any aspect of you that thinks that the Avs took the Stars lightly, especially, you know, I mean, obviously you go down in a 2-0 hole. It's not a good thing. But is there any aspect of that that is possible that this team just didn't see the Stars as that significant a challenge, especially when, you know, the rest of the hockey world is talking about the Colorado Avalanche as a potential Stanley Cup team?
Not necessarily, because they're a team that's been extremely self-aware, whether you talk to players or even people in the front office of, this is nice, the outside world is saying this, but they haven't done anything yet. And when you look at the regular season, it's strange, because everybody talks about, does what happened the regular season matter when it comes to the postseason? And the Dallas Stars were 4-0 against the Avalanche, and some of those games were close, one was not. But then it's the round robin where they beat the Stars 4-0, so it's kind of like, well, which one is it? And then everybody had a chance, because everybody's watching games in these bubbles in Edmonton and Toronto, to see other teams. And everybody's watched what the Dallas Stars have done. Like, they score goals, they play defense, they know how to really shut things down in the third period. So it's probably less about underestimating Dallas, because at this point, you could argue it's hard to underestimate any team who's made it this far in what's been certainly the most bizarre of circumstances. But it's probably just been more about how you guard against that big moment. Because you look at what the Stars have done. Every game, it seems like if they get one goal, a minute later there's another, a minute later there's another. And all of a sudden, what was a 2-1 lead is a 4-2 hole. Or what you thought was a 3-1 lead is now a 4-3 deficit. And that's something that has happened. So the Avalanche know what's coming, especially in the third. It's just, how do you guard against that big moment? And that's where it takes consistency, not only just from Pavel Francouz and the defenseman, but really everyone imaginable in the sense of playing a complete game.
Ryan Clark is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ryan covers the Colorado Avalanche for TheAthletic.com. The Avalanche down 2-1 to the Dallas Stars. They're without key members of their team, Eric Johnson on the blue line, and of course, goaltender Philip Grubauer, which leads me to my question, Ryan, of Pavel Francouz, the goalie who's now the number one goalie for the Colorado Avalanche going forward. Is he up to this challenge? Is he... You know, Grubauer was playing some pretty good hockey, and the Avalanche had the comfort of him being in the net. You know, obviously, Francouz not as experienced. Is he up for this challenge of now having to, you know, defeat the Dallas Stars more often than not in order to come back and win this series?
You could argue it appears that way, just because everybody talks about his lack of NHL experience, but you look at what he did in Europe, and yes, there is a difference, but in Europe, he is someone who has played in Czech extra league of playoffs. He's played in KHL playoffs, and his numbers have been good. He was one of the big reasons the Colorado Eagles, in their first year being an AHL affiliate for the Avalanche, were able to get to the postseason. But also, you talk about this moment that he's been faced with. in terms of how do you fill in for an injured Philip Grubauer. That's really been Pavel Francouz this season in his first year with the Avalanche. I mean, yes, he was getting games as you would expect as a backup with the idea of how is this going to look with him being an undersized goalie who's only, you know, year two into his North American playing experience. But what you've seen is someone who can not only come in and sort of galvanize things if Grubauer had an off night and Jared Bednar pulled him, but even when Grubauer has been hurt, so let's go back to the game they played against the Bruins. It's a 2-1 game in Boston. Philip Grubauer gets hurt. Pavel Francouz comes in, and he's able to do everything needed to stop a Bruins onslaught, again, at a time when this team is injured, to help them take a 2-1 win at TD Garden. But again, it also goes back to something else, too. People said so much about, you know, Pavel Francouz and Anton Khudobin with the Dallas Stars in the sense of, like, well, are they ready for this? Let's look at what this season was, this league was. Not every team has a Connor Hellebuyck or a Carey Price or a John Gibson who you know they're going to play 65 times this season. There's a lot of teams that have been using that tandem approach. Colorado, Dallas, we've seen the Islanders do it. The Rangers have kind of been forced into a makeshift, you know, version of that, sometimes two or three goalies that team is juggling. But either way, what you're seeing is it's happening more in this league where it's a tandem approach as opposed to just one player. And so, yes, it leads to questions of, okay, who's the best fit? But at the same time, when there's an injury, at least the team knows what they're getting with who's in that.
Yeah, Ryan, I wanted to go back, you know, to the injuries because it's really unfortunate that, you know, earlier in the series, the Avalanche lost all of these players. And I think you'd agree the Avalanche, you know, are prepared for this. They faced adversity, you know, earlier in the season with, you know, some injuries to key players. When you talk about some of these injured players, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but are there any chances that we'll see any of these players like Jonas Donskoy or Matt Calvert, you know, or Eric Johnson, Philip Grubauer? Is there any chance at all we'll see any of these players back in the playoffs? And, you know, do you expect Jared Bednar to kind of stick with the lineup that we saw in Game 3 tomorrow with, you know, a guy like Valerie Nichushkin up on the second line and, you know, Logan O'Connor on the fourth line? Do you expect Bednar to stick with that similar lineup?
So let's start with the injury. So it's a situation with Philip Grubauer and Eric Johnson. Jared Bednar said they're out indefinitely, so no one really knows what the timeline for their return is going to look like. With Jonas Donskoy, as well as with Matt Calvert, that one's a little bit maybe easier to figure out in the sense that Matt Calvert has been day-to-day. He has not played at all this series, so possibly he could return. We'll, of course, find out more when the Avalanche have availability later this afternoon, and it could be the same thing with Donskoy. Now, as far as what the lines look like, it is possible that you could see what they did in Game 3 carry over into Game 4. It's possible that they could shift a few things around, like we saw when Andrei Burakovsky was logging minutes with Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen. But again, with Jared Bednar and the way his staff look at things, it goes back to what combination makes the most sense, not just from an attack perspective, but how do you operate in the defensive zone to get to those quick breakouts that has made them such a strong force throughout the year in terms of using their team's speed to really sort of get at opponents. So it's going to be interesting, but really the big question is what's this going to look like for someone like Nikita Zadorov? He didn't play when he returned to the bench. He didn't play the entire third period. He only played around 10 and a half to maybe 11 minutes. And Jared Bednar said that he was outstanding in the sense of Zadorov's performance. So what will that look like? Is Zadorov someone who's going to be an option for Game 4? Or if not, what do they do? Do they go with experience with someone like Mark Barberio? Or do they turn to the young guys like a Bowen Byram or a Connor Timmins? Because look, with Timmins, he's only played two games this year, so you have a little bit more of a room before you hit that ELC mark. Whereas with Bowen Byram, he hasn't played at all. So it's a lot of decisions that the Avalanche have to make when it comes to injuries and personnel.
And Ryan, it's not often you play your first pro games in the playoffs as opposed to in the regular season. That's what Cale Makar did. How important was that, those 10 games he played last season in the playoffs for Colorado, preparing him for, you know, this year's playoffs?
You know, it's interesting because I think when you look at him and you look at what he's done, it's really been about what's the next step. So you think back to when the injury to Eric Johnson happened. And it led to him playing what averaged to about 60 seconds a shift. Jared Bednar was asked, hey, with Cale Makar, is this going to be what we expect? And he's like, we're about to find out. And so that's just it. It's like, it's a guy that, look, you look at what he did last year, 6 points, 10 games. It was just understanding that he's doing this in limited ice time. What's this going to look like a year, two, three down the road? And now you're starting to see that. And what's a really interesting juxtaposition is, how does that compare to someone like Miro Heiskanen, who, of course, was also taken in 2017? And, like, yes, they are different players. One's more of an offensive-minded player. One's more of a defensive-minded player, although you look at Heiskanen's stats this postseason, and you kind of go, okay, maybe he really can do everything. And with Makar, it's going to be that same thing. It's how is that commitment on the defensive level, which you've seen him shuffle through different partners. Like, yes, it was Ryan Graves. Now he's been playing with Ian Cole. There are times he plays with Samuel Girard when they're trying to, you know, retain possession and really create scoring chances. But as it relates to Makar, again, it's just, it's another step in his evolution.
Ryan Clark covers the Colorado Avalanche for TheAthletic.com. The Avs looking to equalize the series against the Dallas Stars when that series resumes from its postponement tomorrow evening. Ryan, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
And no problem. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure, Ryan. Take care. When we come back, we're going to talk about Alan Walsh's tweet right through the heart of Peter DeBoer. Talk about Marc-Andre Fleury's reaction. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Alan's been my agent for a long time. I've known him since I'm 15. We're always very close. We always talk about hockey or other things in life also. And I think he's a guy that always protects or cares a lot about his players, and it does about me also.
Vegas Golden Knights goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury coming to the defense or coming up with an explanation for why his agent, Alan Walsh, posted a picture of alleging or implying that the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, Pete DeBoer, has stabbed Marc-Andre Fleury right through the belly with a gigantic sword.
Well, it's appropriate imagery.
It's a hell of a
team they play for.
It's a hell of a sentence that I got to say right there. I did not expect to say that agent implies coach stabs player through stomach with giant machete would ever be in today's show plan. But here we are. It's a brave new world.
I think it was more of a medieval sword.
Well, yeah, sure.
And by the way, can someone show me the picture? Because I'm blocked by Alan Walsh.
Yeah, so am I. So I had to use...
I'm not.
Yeah, well, good. That's.
But he deleted it, so you can't see it. It's the internet, so you can find it.
You can give it a quick look.
Who was blocked first? Was I blocked first, or were you blocked first?
Probably Drew.
No, I think it was Ezzy.
Really?
I think it was Ezzy, yeah. I mean,
I think Ezzy only got blocked because he tried to give Alan Walsh an Ezzy.
No, that's exactly what happened.
You tried to give him an Ezzy award?
That's when he blocked us, yeah. Shout out to our boy Sean Jacob. We were kind of a little bit,
let's
just say aggressive back in the... That was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was that...
Yeah, now you have children. Now you have children. That's something that we should never, ever forget because it's still horrifying and scary on multiple different levels. In any event, we'll talk about that imagery put out there by Alan Walsh during this segment. I should say, though, that this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Corridon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. Coming up this week, a special burger feature of the week at Bernstein's Deli. It's called the Kale Seitan. Ezzy already tried it this morning. I'm waiting to have mine coming up at the end of the show. It's a tropical vegan fried chicken burger. It's a house-fried vegan chicken patty, banana pepper relish, pineapple red cabbage slaw, vegan garlic mayo, vegan hamburger bun, a completely vegan offering from our friends at Bernstein's Deli. You can get it, I believe, starting on Monday at Bernstein's Deli. Ezzy, how was the sandwich? I mean, I didn't actually see you chew it. I saw you inhale it like a duck. But, that's no surprise at this point.
Yeah, it's a 10 out of 10. I mean, everything that Bernstein's puts out is a 10 out of 10, except the Illegal Curve, which is, of course, a 12 out of 10.
Yes.
But, no, it's amazing. I mean, you just mentioned it. It's a little bit different. They haven't done this before. It's a vegan fried burger, but it's unbelievable. I love the banana pepper relish. It's really tasty, and you've got the red cabbage slaw in there. So it's really good. It'll be available starting next week, and I highly recommend it. Awesome.
There you go. At Bernstein's Deli for more information, check them out, bernsteinsdeli.com.
It's one of those things, though, when I saw Ezzy start to crack it before 9 o'clock this morning, I thought to myself, Ezzy, go out by the pond.
Just
you're
be
not
outside.
Eating inside.
You guys should be lucky. So, you know, for those, I mean, everybody listening won't know this, but I went to Bernstein's before the show and picked them up because Aaron's a good buddy, and you know, he gave us these burgers to try. And you guys should just be happy that I didn't eat your burgers on the way here. Because
never mind happy. I'm shocked you didn't eat our burgers
that
on the way here.
That is actually a first.
Yeah, I mean, typically you have three hamburgers or three burgers of any variety.
I usually you know, put down a couple junior chickens before the show.
This might explain why you have to stand up every 35 seconds because your back is in such disarray that you can't sit in a chair anymore.
Let's just say Ezzy's days back in the day as a delivery driver were often punctuated with him sampling food he was delivering.
One for you, one for me. Right. One for you,
two
one for me.
I still think I'm the only driver in the history of Pizza Hut delivery drivers to have five pizzas stolen out of the back seat. When I came back to Pizza Hut, this is when I was
stole them yourself.
No, I did not. And when I was 19 years old, I worked for the Pizza Hut on Pembina. I also used to work for Mona Lisa, but back in the day, Pizza Hut on Pembina.
He was in high demand by local pizza delivery company.
Well, they knew that they were going to make back anything they paid him in pizza money.
Yeah, Mr. Bones wanted me. Everybody wanted me. Niagara. But, you know, when you go back to Pizza Hut and you tell them that pizzas were stolen and then your manager tells you that's never happened in the history of Pizza Hut. I'm just happy I didn't have to pay for them.
I'm just shocked that they still employed you after you managed to get pizza stolen from the back of your car. That's an impressive feat, I must say.
I remember where it was. It was on South Osborne.
Well, you know, earlier this week I sent out a tweet, you know, about an escapade, as we like to call them.
Yeah.
And the audience was clamoring for more escapades. So
there's always plenty.
I believe this one about Ezzy, you know, getting pizza stolen out of the back of his car as a pizza delivery guy qualifies.
Unfortunately, I'm old and washed up now, and it would just be dad capades. Like, it would be about me, you know, I don't know, going to Costco and getting, you know, wipes and diapers. I don't know. I'm pretty boring these days.
Yeah, your life depresses me a little bit, I gotta say. Yeah. Let's talk about Mark, about Alan Walsh's tweet. I mean,
talking about not helpful.
Coming to the defense of your player, that's fine, but this was so beyond the pale.
No, why do this now?
Why do it? Exactly.
Like, Dave and I were talking about this off air. Like, why would you do this now? Like, all you're doing is causing confusion here and bringing controversy. And the thing is, guys, especially with the condensed schedule, most likely Marc-Andre Fleury is going to get into a game anyways.
Now that there's back-to-backs and everything else, and they're trying to cram as many games, it's amazing. You know, normally, you know, they are happy to drag out all these series. You know, a seven-game series could take 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Now they're playing games. I think they're 4 and 5 nights. I think for one of the teams after the postponement.
If the Golden Knights
yesterday
series,
and Friday,
if the Golden Knights Canucks series, Drew, goes to 7 games. Yeah. They will play 5 games in 8 days.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible given the, you know, how they never do back-to-backs and they never try and rush things in the playoffs. And that's obviously a feature of the times. But, you know, I thought that Alan Walsh's tweet obviously was woefully inappropriate. I thought Marc-Andre Fleury's response was pretty pathetic as well for a guy who's the happy-go-lucky
Marc-Andre. What's he going to do?
Now, I agree with Dave. Like, what is Fleury supposed to say there?
Walsh doesn't put out that tweet without Fleury knowing about it.
Well, we don't know that.
I know that. I'm saying that right now.
No, that's conjecture.
It's conjecture. Fine. But Alan, it takes 24 hours for the tweet to come down. Come on. If Alan Walsh puts out that tweet and Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't want that tweet
out there, I don't think he did know it.
It gets off within 12 minutes. Never mind 24 hours.
I would be hard pressed. I mean, look, Drew, it's plausible. But I'd be hard pressed for Marc-Andre Fleury, the way he seems to be described. Again, I have no personal knowledge of him, but for him to say, for Alan Walsh to be like, I'm going to put out this tweet, and Marc-Andre Fleury being like, yeah, go ahead. Like, I'm hard pressed to see that happening. I see a guy. Look, Alan Walsh is a guy who defends his clients. He's an aggressive guy. You two would know that. Bing blocked me. I wouldn't. Yeah. But the fact is that, again, I just think the time and the place is so inopportune to have, like, why are we talking about this?
Well, you know, we're talking about it because it happened.
No. I'm not asking that.
Yeah, I know.
With
legitimately.
I honestly can't believe, especially the way Vegas looked, right?
Yeah.
Like, to have anything detract from that conversation is completely unnecessary because this is a team that many people are picking to be a Stanley Cup contender, maybe
winner.
The favorite. So
they're the favorite in the West,
right? So the fact is, and to Ezzy's point, you may need to use both goaltenders. Robin Leonard could get injured, you know. So like, why would you want to have any bad feelings in the ranks? It makes no sense.
That's why I think Fleury knew. Certainly, if he didn't know about it, he knew about it within 10 minutes of it occurring, and when it takes him 24 hours to come down, that's Fleury saying, leave it up, and then we'll take it down after I make my comments
and
get my point across.
Who made that picture? Because it clearly wasn't Alan Walsh. He's a lawyer. He's not a graphic designer. I want to know who made that.
Dave, you're a pretty good Photoshop expert. Do you have anything to say here? Spotlight on you right now?
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm fairly certain that someone with basic skills could have put
I'm not joking.
Together.
I still haven't seen
the
picture.
Do you have MS Paint? I think you can, think you can do it.
You haven't seen it yet?
No, I'm blocked. Okay, we'll go to break. You can find it on the internet. Use a Google search.
It's deleted now.
Ezzy, it's the internet.
The internet never deletes anything.
Oh, the internet deletes.
Just like your story about the pizza pies, that's never getting deleted from the internet. When we come back, Mike McKenna, Vegas Golden Knights analyst, will join us to talk more about the tweet, more about the photo, more about the fallout from it, and of course,
by the way, I did one search. I found it in one second.
I mean, you know it. Exactly. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg is across from me. Dave Manouk is next to me. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can reach us here via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can send us a text message. Send your text to 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Vegas Golden Knights analyst Mike McKenna. Mike, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. Happy to anytime. Doing well here in Las Vegas. And, yeah, happy to talk some hockey here.
Well, that's great. We appreciate it, Mike. And obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Golden Knights Canucks series, which is, of course, deadlocked now at one game apiece. But before we get into the series itself, we have to start with Alan Walsh's tweet and Marc-Andre Fleury's comments. The tweet, as we just referenced in our previous segment, shows a sword going through Marc-Andre Fleury, and Pete DeBoer's name is written on the sword. I assume this is something your agent never did for you during your playing career there, Mike?
No, he did not. but yeah, I mean, the thing is, how long ago is that now at this point? I mean, it's been, I think, a week. And I think you're likely to see Marc-Andre Fleury in the net really soon for the Vegas Golden Knights, considering the back-to-backs that are coming up. So to me, it's a non-issue at this point especially, and I would bet that it was a non-issue very quickly once things were discussed amongst the players in the locker room.
Well, to that point, you mentioned that how Marc-Andre Fleury is probably going to get into the net coming up soon for a game for the Golden Knights, you know, compressed schedule, back-to-backs, things of that nature. Doesn't it make the tweet almost more inappropriate, given how, you know, how much they need Marc-Andre Fleury? And I know that the players, you know, they say all the right things, that it's a non-issue, that it's been resolved and things of that nature. But doesn't it make the tweet, just the timing of the tweet, so unfortunate and so inappropriate to begin with?
Well, I mean, listen, I'm not in Alan Walsh's shoes, and he can do whatever he pleases. You're free to post what you want to a Twitter account. And, you know, I'm sure it wasn't necessarily an easy 24 hours in some ways for players, especially for Marc-Andre, but the Golden Knights addressed it right away. That's the thing, you know, and the fact that we're still talking about it just kind of means that it's lingering in the media when to the team, it doesn't matter any longer. You know, it was put to bed quickly, and that's the nature of locker rooms. You know, you take care of business as quick as you need to, because you can't let things fester. You know, it's not a schoolyard. It's not the playground where you hold grudges forever, especially when you're trying to win a Stanley Cup. So, whatever effect, you know, may have been desired, it's long history to me at this point.
And Mike, just sticking with the goaltending, and obviously, you know, we want to get into, you know, some of the other aspects of this series, and it's looking like it's going to be an epic 6 or 7 gamer here. But, you know, you mentioned the back-to-backs coming up today and tomorrow, but if this series does go to, you know, 6 or 7 games, there could potentially be a back-to-back next Thursday and Friday. And obviously, you know, I don't want to ask you how Pete DeBoer is going to necessarily, you know, use, you know, Robin Lehner and Marc-Andre Fleury, because you don't know the answer to that. But is there a chance that you might even see Marc-Andre Fleury twice in this series? And how big of an advantage is that? Because I think you'd agree right now the Golden Knights are maybe the only team that essentially have two number one goalies.
Well, I think there's definitely a chance, you know, and I don't think it's just based on purely the back-to-backs either. If Marc-Andre Fleury goes in and has an incredible game, you never know what can happen. You know, it's a luxury that the Golden Knights have, as you alluded to, having two guys who have been number ones, who are very capable number ones, who Marc-Andre's got Stanley Cups on his resume, Robin Leonard's a Vezina finalist on his resume, for good reason. So I don't think there's any hesitation to play either of them, depending on the way things start to shake out, and especially with that condensed schedule. You know, there aren't as many teams with two goalies that have been labeled number ones, but I really look at this as being the quality of goaltending across the board in the NHL is higher than it's ever been, where it's tandems. You know, we're not talking about straight backup and starter any longer in hardly any place. You know, it's two guys that can play, whether you like 1A or 1B as a describing factor. Like I said, I prefer tandem to it, but I think there's a very real possibility that, yes, you could see Marc-Andre more than once. You could see him take the ball and run with it at some point in playoffs if Pete DeBoer thinks that that's the best course of action for his team.
You know, Mike, being a Winnipeg-based show, we're obligated to ask about Manitobans. And, of course, with Vegas, it could be all day because there's so many. But
there's quite a connection.
I mean, just yeah, exactly. But how good has Mark Stone been for Vegas? I mean, he's such a good player. And when that trade went down, you know, I mean, obviously Winnipeg was one of the teams that was in on him. And you can just see how impactful he is game in, game out. And, you know, there's often talk about, you know, wingers not having as big an impact, but just how important has Mark Stone been for this Vegas team to get them to that next level?
Oh, massive. You know, he is a complete total package. What he lacks in the absolute star power to be able to, you know, put a hat trick up and change a game, he makes up for in all the little things that he does. You know, and that's not taking away from him in any way. He's one of the best players in the league. If you ask all the general managers in the National Hockey League, Mark Stone would be incredibly high on their list. His defensive play, his game sense, his awareness, and he's just so consistent. And it comes from the intelligence that he plays with. And he gets better the bigger it gets. You know, he carried the Ottawa Senators to a conference final. He's got this team with the Golden Knights prepared to hopefully make another run. He was excellent in playoffs last year, even after being traded midseason. You don't always see that, you know. So he's faced moments in his career where some players would wither away or they would face struggles, and he's consistently met them with strong play. And the team just gravitates to him. He's a pure leader. I played with him in Ottawa. He was – should have been the captain in that room. The team didn't elect to name a captain, you know, probably because Mark Stone didn't have an 8-year contract, which seems to be a requisite nowadays for captaincy, which I had take issue with at some points, but that's neither here nor there. So Mark Stone really is like, he is the heartbeat, the emotional core of this team when they're playing.
Vegas Golden Knights analyst Mike McKenna is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Mike, Elias Pettersson, I mean, stopping him is a lot easier said than done. What do you think the Golden Knights need to do, or how do you think they should deploy their strategy to try and slow down the Canucks superstar?
Well, he's such a good player that it's certainly a containment factor. You know, expecting to be able to completely shut down somebody his caliber, probably a little bit optimistic. I thought the Golden Knights did a very good job of that in game one, though. They were tough on him through the neutral zone. They constantly had bodies on him, and they didn't have to be big hits, but they were separating from the puck. They were not allowing him to enter the offensive zone with speed and set up shop. You know, Elias Pettersson isn't just a shooting gallery. You know, it's not just the big one-timer. He has amazing game sense. You saw that early in the game with this pass to Tyler Toffoli, a minute and 30 into it, you know, wrapped around the net, corner of his eye, sees Toffoli on the backside. So for the Golden Knights, they have to make sure they're strong on Pettersson through the neutral zone. They've got to get a piece of flesh on him every single time they can, all over the ice. And you just cannot give him time and space. And that being said, though, you can't be so focused on him that he draws so much attention that you leave other players open, because he has that ability to find somebody on the ice, a teammate to distribute the puck to. Very complete player, very tough to solve, but if the Golden Knights can play more like they did in game one against him, they should be more successful.
Mike, Alex Tuch is leading the Golden Knights with 6 goals, playing on that third line with Nicholas Roy and Nick Cousins, and we know that, you know, the Golden Knights have, you know, four deep lines. You know, they've had four deep lines since they came into the NHL. But what are you seeing maybe, you know, out of his game that's maybe a little bit different than, you know, previous years? I know that this is your first year, you know, covering the team, but you're familiar with Tuck. But a lot of people are, you know, saying that this is his coming out party. But just what have you seen from Tuck? Because he's a guy that, you know, is playing obviously a very key role on this team.
Well, they're calling him the X Factor. So X Factor 89, which I'm sure he's probably liking because it's a pretty cool nickname. But, you know, really the big thing for him is that he's healthy. He spent this whole season battling injuries. He was in and out of the lineup at times because of it. And he took the pause and he really got serious about his game. He lost 10 pounds. He cut some things out of his diet. He was focused. And when he came back, you could tell he was even faster than he was before. I mean, when he gets galloping down the wing, it's tough to stop the guy. Straight line speed when he's driving at the net. He's such a big frame. He's so strong. He has such speed. And that's where he generates so much from. And, you know, I've seen it over the years. I've played against Alex Tuck. I know what it's like to face his shot. But I see a hunger in his game now. I see him driving to get to the front of the net, not just on power plays where you're expected to stand there, but when you're creating your own offense. And he's got really good chemistry going right now with his third line teammates. Nick Waugh has had a breakout season for the Golden Knights. He was part of the Calder Cup winning championship team with the Charlotte Checkers last year, a great find by the Golden Knights to trade for him. And then Nick Cousins has been on the left side and another great compliment to Alex Tuck. So really you factor all those things in, the confidence that he's playing with, the shape he's in, and the chemistry of his line mates, and it's the best hockey Alex Tuck's played.
No, Mike, I'm going to be considered a homer or a provincial homer because I'm sticking with guys who are based out of Manitoba. I want to ask you about Zach Whitecloud. He's a guy, you know, especially here in Winnipeg, if you watch the Moose, we saw him play when he was playing with the Wolves quite often. But what kind of impact is he having in his first run in the playoffs?
Well, he's been steady. He's done everything you can ask of a rookie. And at this point, when you get to playoffs, you still have that rookie tag attached to you. But for him, coming in midway through the season to the Golden Knights, you know, he was still very much learning on the job at times and succeeding in doing so, which was the impressive reason why and a big reason why he stayed in the lineup. You know, there are other defensive prospects that the Golden Knights have, and Whitecloud has stood out amongst all of them. You know, he's a right-handed shot. He kills penalties. That's his biggest strength right now. He is one of the first that's deployed on the PK for his willingness to block shots, for his intellectual way to go about things. You know, he thinks the game very well. So when you're on a penalty kill, that aids him finding lanes, taking away pass options. And his offensive game's grown too. He had a big goal early in the round robin where you started to see that he's really getting it. He's learning when to jump into play, when to use his offensive instincts. So right now he's doing everything they want, steady Eddie, but his game's continuing to grow in a lot of different areas.
Mike McKenna covers the Vegas Golden Knights as a TV analyst. The Golden Knights and the Canucks, Game 3 goes later on tonight, and each team looking to take the lead in the series. Mike, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime. Always happy to join. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Mike. Thanks so much. When we come back, one final segment. We update you on what's happening between the Lightning and the Bruins. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here by a text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. One game underway already into the Toronto bubble. For that, let's take a look at the Bodog.net scoreboard, where the Tampa Bay Lightning currently lead the Boston Bruins 1-0 about 15 minutes into the first period. The goal scored by Andre Palat.
Here's a steal and a carry back in by Point. Brayden Point tried to feed one across, blocked down by Krug. Point again out in front. They score! It's Palat, and it's 1-0.
Palat getting the goal for the Lightning, as I mentioned, to give him the 1-0 lead. That's his third of the playoffs. Still to come tonight in the NHL playoffs. The Flyers and the Islanders, game three of that series goes later on, and then the nightcap of a triple header. The Golden Knights and the Canucks, that series also tied at one. The Bodog.net scoreboard is brought to you, as you might guess, by Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net, make a play.
You know, I gotta say, that Flyers-Islanders series,
yes,
is turning out to be a pretty good one, because if you watch that game, you know, the Islanders erase a three-goal deficit. Obviously, Phil Myers scores the winning goal in overtime there, but, you know, this Lightning-Bruins series, guys, we knew that it was going to be high skill, and obviously, you know, the Lightning have a chance to go up 3-1, but that Flyers-Islanders series, it'll be really interesting to see how this one goes, because, you know, you go down 2-0 to the Islanders, I don't like your chances, but, you know, now it's a best of five.
Yeah, it's a best of five, and I mean, you know, the most fascinating matchup in that series to me is the one behind the bench. You have Barry Trotz and Alain Vigneault, two guys who are probably some of the most experienced head coaches, probably some of the most well-regarded head coaches in the game today, and that's a real chess match. Those are two guys who know each other very well. I mean, Trotz with his time, of course, in Washington, and Vigneault having been with the Rangers for so many years before going to the Flyers. Two guys who know each other, and you know, watching the intricacies of that battle in that series is very interesting to me.
No, absolutely, and you've got, you know, the goaltending matchup. Carter Hart's numbers are ridiculous so far in the playoffs, and obviously Semyon Varlamov was pulled in game two, right? Thomas Greiss comes in, guys, but we know that Varlamov's going to get the start in game three tonight. But the other thing to me that, you know, has to be talked about is, you know, Claude Giroux doesn't have a goal yet. I mean, Claude Giroux, the captain of the Flyers, does not have a goal yet in, what, 11 games. And, you know, Kevin Hayes had two goals in game two, you know, but going into that game, he only had one goal. Hayes has obviously been, you know, one of the Flyers' top forwards, you know, along with Sean Couturier. But to me, it's almost unbelievable that Scott Laughton was a healthy scratch last game. And he's been a healthy scratch. No, he's only been a healthy scratch once. James Van Riemsdyk is the other guy who's been a healthy scratch. Like, Dave, you're talking about, like, a five, whatever he makes, $5-6 million a year player. Like, the fact that Van Riemsdyk has been a regular healthy scratch, I'd have to check how many times he's been a healthy scratch, but I think it's three or four times. And then, as I mentioned, Scott Laughton was a healthy scratch. So, like, you remember Laughton was really good, you know, in the round robin portion of the tournament. So it's just amazing to me that the Flyers are in the second round of the playoffs, right? And you've got a guy like Giroux who's yet to score a goal. Sean Couturier, by the way, has only got one goal. I mean, he's got 7 points, but, and Couturier's obviously, you know, a Selke finalist this year. He's a great player. All I'm saying is the big guns for the Flyers, you know, really haven't got it done. So far, it's really been, you know, goaltending and defense that's got them to this point.
It is sort of fascinating that the guys that you immediately think of as the Flyers' driving forces haven't necessarily been that. Kevin Hayes has been great for the Flyers. You know, a guy who didn't have great success here for the Jets when they brought him over from the Rangers a couple of years ago. He got that big contract in Philly this past offseason, and people thought that, I mean, thought it was a lot of money, but he's been great for the Philadelphia Flyers, both in the regular season and so far in these playoffs.
But that's also not a bad thing, right? If you have your major, your big dogs not necessarily contributing, I mean, we talked about how, you know, with Ryan, how the Avs were only getting scoring from their big dogs and not from the secondary. So if you're a team like Philadelphia who have your secondary scoring providing you with offense, it's only going to get better when your primary scoring starts to step up. So that's a good thing. And the other question I have for Jets fans, for, you know, talking about former players who played for the Jets, is Zach Bogosian going to bring the Stanley Cup to Winnipeg?
I don't think he's going to bring it here, but Zach Bogosian looks like he's been reborn in Tampa Bay. I mean, I guess it goes to show you what health will do for a player. And when you're not healthy, how it impacts your performance. I mean, I don't know that at any point in time when he was a member of the Buffalo Sabres, was he ever really healthy? I mean, it seemed like he was out of the lineup more often than anything else.
No, he had a lot. He was injury prone.
Yeah, he was injury prone. He goes to Tampa Bay, you know, basically after his contract.
He refused to go down to Rochester.
Well, his contract was terminated with the Sabres. He ends up in Tampa Bay, and all of a sudden he looks rejuvenated on the back end of the Tampa Bay
Lightning. Top pair with Victor Hedman.
Not a bad place to be playing with Victor Hedman. That's it for the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests.
John Mattis, Claude Vilgrain, Mike McKenna, and Ryan Clark. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the show, they're available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's available on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor, doing a great job back at the station. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manouk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.